You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, my friends? Hope all of you out there are having a wonderful little week here. We appreciate you for joining us. I am Sean Oshadi, joined here by the guys Alexander K. Lee and Jed Meshew from MMA Fighting, of course. And we are here because, fellas, I don't know if you realize, but it is a pretty busy weekend in the combat sports space. We're getting spoiled this weekend. A smorgasbord, some might say. Not only do we have UFC on Saturday, headlined by, I would say, a sick fight between two of the best lightweight prospects in the world. Some people may pan it, but I think that fight's really sick. We also have a full slate Friday as well, a triple header. We got the Moose, Gegard Mousasi, defending his middleweight title once again at Bellator 282 against the undefeated Johnny Eblen. Got some bantamweight Grand Prix action as well in there. And then you got the heavyweights and the light heavyweights back in action over at PFL 5. And of course, all the weirdness that will be going on with BKFC 26. And so, fellas, on Friday and Saturday, we'll have all our usual UFC pre-fight coverage for y'all out there, so don't worry on that. But we wanted to actually highlight the best of the rest here for you guys today. So today, we're going to focus just on this Friday night triple header slate. AK, I want to start with you. I mean, when you look at this Friday, at this weekend, do you like what you see? Is there enough out there in the non-UFC world to entice you, to get you to come take a little bite?
Yeah, the times are kind of overlapping a little bit, aren't they? Oh, they're actually like right on top of each other, some of these cards.
Yeah, they are on top of each other. So you got to make a choice.
This is definitely one of those weekends. Why do you say that, Jen?
It does depend. Well, because the PFL pacing means the PFL is going to be going long after.
That is fair.
Bellator is already done.
You could catch a one PFL fight, switch over to Bellator, and probably watch three or four Bellator fights, and then come back before the next PFL fight is on. So maybe they will find some sort of synergy there, whether intentional or not. And then, of course, you throw the BKFC in, which I think starts a little bit later in the evening. It's a fun time. I'm glad we're doing this preview show. We kind of mulled it over internally, just give people some inside baseball here. Like, should we do preview shows? And we're like, do two preview shows, because, of course, there will be another one for Saturday night's UFC fights. Sorry, I broke our no UFC rule already. It's especially, you have good names. You got names casual people know: Gegard Mousasi, Anthony Pettis. You have high stakes. I mean, again, this is the second round of fights for the heavyweights and featherweights, and then the one lightweight fight with Pettis on at PFL. And then, of course, you have yourself a nice little title fight featuring one of the best middleweights in the world at Bellator. And as for BKFC, it's actually like a surprisingly intriguing card. I think they have, again, they've loaded some recognizable names on there, people that they have invested time and money into marketing. And this one strength of BKFC, beyond just, you know, the unique combat sports product that they offer up, is that, like, they have signed well-known MMA fighters, and they have really gone all in on getting them interviews and putting them out there and getting the highlights out there. Luis Palomino, Jimmy Rivera, and what I believe is his BKFC debut. Beck Rawlings, of course, one of the more famous BKFC fighters, and one of their own homegrown stars in Britton Hart. So, and Ulysses Diaz, I should mention Ulysses Diaz as well. So, lots to look forward to there. This is definitely one of those weekends where you'd kind of imagine, like, what if you could take the best bits from each card and merge them into one? Would you have a super event that is more intriguing than the UFC's event? I don't know. I'm not sure, but I'm certainly interested in checking out a little bit of all three of these.
I mean, Jed, we're gonna dive into all of this, but I actually kind of want you to drive this ship here for a second. We're at your whims here for this moment. When you look at this slate, where do you think we should start? Like, when I say best non-UFC fight of the weekend, what stands out? Where does your mind jump to?
The best individual non-UFC fight of the weekend, and maybe the best card, is Bellator 282.
I agree with you.
It won't be my choice, but that's very specifically. I will be in attendance for the PFL. The PFL is in my backyard. It's in Atlanta, Georgia. So I will be next to the Smart Cage. I don't think you guys understand. I'm going to be within touching distance. I may even touch the Smart Cage, which not a lot of people can say. I'm very excited about that. And so for that reason, the PFL is the event I am the most interested in this weekend. But I think objectively on paper, Bellator 282 is the best top to bottom card and certainly has the best non-UFC fight of the weekend with their main event.
Jed, are you scared of what might happen when you come into contact with the PFL Smart Cage? Could this be like a Spider-Man getting bitten by the spider moment?
I'll be so much smarter.
And who knows what else? I mean, who knows what other powers you may absorb? That Smart Cage is made with some high tech. The stats, like, will you become a computer this week?
It's going to be like jacking into the Matrix, I think, yes. Where I'm just going to suddenly, I know Kung Fu. Oh. And I know how fast in miles per hour your Kung Fu strikes are coming at me. I could not be more excited about the PFL Smart Cage this weekend.
You are a live blog guy on MMA Fighting usually, so your live blogs will suddenly just be like binary code coming down instead of text. You'll just be very confused, like, what's going on here? What am I reading? An idea. And yeah, you'll also be able to judge fights like perfectly. Like, you'll be like the best judge ever. You'll know how hard the strikes are landing. I'm scared, frankly.
I don't know. Casey will disagree because stats don't tell the whole story, and I'm going to know all the stats once I've integrated with the Smart Cage.
Oh my gosh.
Is there an actual
get excited?
Is there an actual danger here that it's like you come too close to your dreams that like it's almost like disappointing in reality, like whatever you visualized in your head for this?
I think there's almost no chance of that happening. Honestly, you're never going to hear me say this about at any other point in time because pacing across the board for MMA fights is bad and should be faster. With the PFL for this weekend and next weekend, where it's also in Atlanta, I'm really excited about just the intimate amount of time I'm going to have between fights to just absorb the Smart Cage, to try and ask it questions, to learn more about society and fighting and just hope. Because I think that's what the Smart Cage stands for. It stands for hope. So this is the only time I'm excited about the slow pace that will befall us. But, you know, a broken clock's right twice a day, and in this instance, slow pacing is exactly what I need.
You think the Smart Cage is like Siri? You're going to be asking it questions. Smart Cage, tell me where can I get a good taco in the area?
I'm just going to ask it all the things. It's going to it has all of human knowledge in it. It is the Smart Cage. I think we've talked about it, AK. This is the pinnacle of fighting as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. Like, the only experience I want more is to sit cage side or ringside or phone booth side for a fight circus event, which I'm going to try and do either later this year or next year. And then
one day we will make that happen.
And yeah, and then my MMA journey will be complete. I'll have sat cage side for the UFC. I will have never been to a Bellator event, which feels really fitting, honestly.
Jeez,
I'll have seen the Smart Cage. I'll have been next to I've been everywhere. So except for Bellator, which is good. Like, that's how it should be.
All I want from you out of your on the ground reporting on Friday is for you to just get the measurement of some kind of speed of something. Whether you're throwing something towards the cage and you can get a measurement of speed of that, or maybe you're doing a little shadow box. I just need some kind of speed measurement from you, and then we'll call it a night. That's it.
My sincere thing that I'm going to try and make happen over the next 2 weeks as I talk to the PFL people, I want to interview the Smart Cage and I want to do a lot of really dumb things with it. I don't know if it's good content, but it's content that will make my heart happy, and so that's what I want to do.
Well, I think like 5 minutes ago you had said something to the effect of Bellator is the best event of the weekend, and I actually agree with you.
It is the best event of the weekend. That's true.
I totally agree with you in this regard. So let's start there, and let's start with that main event that you mentioned, Gegard Mousasi, Johnny Eblen. We know Gegard. Gegard is a known commodity. We love Gegard. Everybody loves Gegard, except maybe Jed. You don't seem to like Gegard as much, which is weird. You're just a hater. I understand. But any regardless...
Not a hater. I just thought he was going to lose because I thought he was getting old. I was wrong. Hand up, I was wrong. But, like, I just thought he was getting old.
Well, you know, 85 seconds later, he knocked out another fella, Austin Vanderford. And so he is still the middleweight champion. So now is a next man up. Yet another undefeated challenger, this time Johnny Eblen, who is 7-0 in Bellator. He is really one of their homegrown prospects. I think he's gone, like, through, like, three nicknames. Handle guys who are just not on his level and really showed over the course of his time there. He's coming off that win over John Salter. So, AK, when I throw it to you, I mean, is there any danger here for Gegard? We have generally in Bellator seen Gegard, the this is levels to MMA type of thing. With Johnny, on a challenger level of 1 to 10, where are you putting Johnny in terms of danger for Gegard?
Man, he's a solid 7. I think he's a solid 7. I'm sure some people would go higher. I'm probably not as familiar with Johnny Eblen's work as a lot of people. I admit I haven't watched all of his fights, and I'm sure some people have. Great wrestling, which is, you know, something that people have used to defeat Gegard in the past, though one could argue that he's kind of figured that out. He's kind of gotten over that. Also, you know, at middleweight, he's a big 185er, so there's not like a size. He'll be going in as the bigger man, I believe. I didn't get a good look at him and Eblen on scales today, but I believe he'll be going in as a bigger man. I'm probably stealing some of Jed's points here because I know Jed has said before in the past, and I think that's why people think he doesn't like Gegard, is that Gegard Mousasi is in a weird situation in Bellator because so right now he is number 3 in the MMA fighting global rankings. He is behind only Israel Adesanya and Robert Whittaker, and he's in this unfortunately weird situation where there is nothing he can do in Bellator to go over those two guys. There's literally nothing. I think even if Whittaker lost like a bunch of fights, it would probably be to someone else who would then take his spot, and then they would be number 2. Mousasi just cannot rise, and unless Bellator starts somehow bringing in guys, you know, more bigger name guys into Bellator, it just really feels like
a crossover fight with Hennie Hitter.
Yeah, it's Reiner. De Ritter.
I know exactly it is how to derail you.
De Ritter.
I know exactly how to derail you.
No, you will not derail me. You've already derailed. I'm already using your talking points for you, so you've already derailed me enough. but yeah, it just feels like he has so little to gain because I loved the win over Austin Vanderford. I was like, that's hilarious. That's what should be happening. We all thought like he's in another world from Austin Vanderford, and he took care of business. Unfortunately, winning so definitively then has any of his detractors going like, oh, well, he just did what we thought he was going to do. He's just beating, guys in Bellator that he should be beating. And in a sense, that's true. And I think the same thing will happen to Eblen. It's either he loses and then it's an upset and this guy has beaten one of the greatest middleweights of all time, or Mousasi beats him. And then again, your average MMA fan's like, oh, he beat some guy named Johnny Eblen who I wasn't familiar with before this fight. Maybe they should be, but most fans probably aren't. So he can only go down. And yes, every time he steps in there, he's battling whoever's across from him. In this case, John Eblen, a very, very good middleweight, plus father time. I mean, every year you're going to get slower. Someone in Bellator is eventually going to punch that clock. And maybe it's Johnny Eblen. I'm still definitely leaning towards Gegard here. I don't think that time has come for him just yet, but it really can happen anytime. And he just keeps kind of locking these tail defenses. So at least he's smart. It sounds like he might go to light heavyweight next. So we'll see.
Jed, I mean, it's AK put Eblen at a solid 7 in terms of the challenger scale, the danger scale. I think I'd probably feign a little lower, maybe like a 6. Maybe I'm just riding high off of what Gegard did to Austin Vanderford, and obviously again showing I'm just not I'm on a different level than like a lot of these guys you're throwing at me. Maybe I'm just still riding on that a little bit, but I would say a 6. Where are you going in terms of the 1 to 10 scale in terms of challenger danger?
I think 7 is pretty accurate. I mean, it's maybe if we're going danger, then it's probably lower than a 7 because I don't think Eblen is going to be that. He's not doing anything new, but I do think that I like Johnny Eblen. I have Johnny Eblen ranked in my rankings. I think that he's a solid wrestler. He's not like an all-world wrestler, but working at ATT, he has some roundedness to his game. Like, this is a dude who I feel is one of the 15 best middleweights in the world, which I didn't quite feel that way against John Salter or Austin Vanderford or whatever. You know, like I think that this is an appropriate step up, or will be a solid win for Gegard. But as far as risk, it seems pretty low for kind of the stuff that you were mentioning. You know, riding so high off what he did in his last two bouts, maybe this is the time Father Time catches up with him. I thought it was happening already, and then Gegard completely swayed me. You know, like he is, okay, he just had some bad performances. It wasn't that he was getting old and now he's dialed in. I do have questions because apparently he's fat this week. So yes. He apparently had to lose like 30 pounds in 3 days or some astronomical number this coming in this week. So that always gives you a little bit of pause, but my assumption is that he is certainly a better fighter than Johnny Eblen. And I assume he will get the win. So if you're going on danger, maybe a 6 or a 5, but if just quality, I think 7 is pretty right. Cause I think Eblen's a top 15, top 20 middleweight. This is about as good a defense as he can get in Bellator at this point.
We're not going to have a chance to talk about the post of this weekend, most likely with everything going on. So I do want to just briefly, before we move on, hit the topic of what's next. Because at this point, you mentioned, Jed, Gegard, 36 years old. He's like 58 fights deep.
He's about to be 37. His birthday is August 1st.
It's coming up quick. And he is one of the few guys in this division who seems to just be defying age. Because you're right. I thought there's been at least multiple points in his career where I felt like he was either dropping off or maybe we're about to reach the end of it. And then he finds a new surge. And all of a sudden now he's like 12-1 over his last 13. And the one that he lost was a majority decision to Rafael Lovato. And that was like a really great fight. So like he's very clearly still here and he's still relevant. Who knows how much longer that will last, how much more he has left in the tank. But just quickly, do you want him to go to light heavyweight after this? Like, is that the move to challenge for that light heavyweight title after whatever this fight ends? And obviously the light heavyweight situation is a little weird with Bellator right now. But ultimately, is that sort of what you want next from Gegard? Or do you think there's still more for him in this 185 division, AK?
Has that Anderson Nemkov, they've been rebooked, right?
I don't believe so yet.
Rematch? How the hell has that not been booked yet? What the? I'm sorry. That's a whole other show. I'm sorry. For some reason, I just assumed, because that fight was how long ago now? That fight was at least 2 months ago now. Longer? Maybe. Maybe it just feels, I don't know. You know, MMA world moves so quickly. Maybe it feels longer than this. But that should have been rebooked within like 2 weeks. Like, this is absurd. Listen, I said the only reason I'd love to see Musashi go up there, both those guys are a terrible matchup for him. I understand that. Either Corey Anderson or Vadim Nemkov. But again, that's a fight he goes up, he loses, and it's just like a shrug your shoulders. Oh, he went back up to 205. He went to go, you know, become a two-division champion. It happens, right? Because he went down to fight Rory, right? Did he go down to fight Rory? Oh, no, Rory went up to fight him, and then he beat Rory's ass. Going up to 205 would be, you know, it'd be a fun challenge. He's been, he was the Strikeforce light heavyweight champion, if I recall correctly. So, you know, he has the credentials to say, I've won a world title in this weight division before. And I think he'd be a pretty big underdog against either of the top two light heavyweights in Bellator. But it's a medium risk, high reward thing. If he loses, guess what? Goes back down to 185 and fighting the Johnny Eblens of the world again, the Austin Vanderfords, maybe someone who's on this card, actually. I guess I don't know how we want to start digging into that. Anatoly Tokov will be competing. He's probably in line for a title shot next with a victory. It's light heavyweight is the next logical move for him. Those 185 fights are always going to be there. And like I said, one of these guys is going to get him eventually, but he may as well chase some bigger fights before that happens.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you. I mean, at this point, if you look at sort of Bellator's middleweight division, if Gegard can get through Johnny, like, he has more or less gone through everybody pretty notable at this point. Like, maybe you have a Lorenz Larkin out there or something who with a little bit of a name, or like you said, Tokov, but you're kind of starting to reach. You're reaching like Romero Cotton levels of like, we're just throwing anybody in here. What do you think, Jed?
Tokov's the only guy who, he's not interesting because no one cares. So you can't use the word interesting, but like, meritocratically is the only guy who would make sense, assuming Tokov wins this weekend. Like, he may well not. I don't know. Probably is going to, but we'll see. I wanted to go up to 205 mainly because the fights are, maybe they're not more fun. It's hard to say that for sure, but they're certainly more notable. Like, if he goes up to 205,
he can
fight.
They have a bunch of names there.
Yeah. The names are more interesting. Like, a Rumble Johnson fight is objectively fun.
Sign me up for that. That's
Romero.
Great. Yeah.
Like, yeah. Like, that's a really fun fight. I know it sounds a bit weird to talk about, like, in this manner about a guy who was literally the current champion in an MMAfighting.com tremendous website. And MMAfighting.com's rankings is the number 3 middleweight in the world. But, like, I don't, because they're, because he can't do the thing where he fights like the best guys in the world because he exists in Bellator. I just want him to do the retirement tour, even if he's not going to retire. Like, just do the thing, do the Legends tour, because the dude's been fighting for 20 friggin' years. Like, 20 years of fighting. And so even if he still has tread on the tires, which somehow he does miraculously, he should not, but somehow it's he
incredible.
Does. Like,
it's really incredible.
I just want to see him fight people. Like, I, no one will care about this fight. I mean, they would give a huge amount of a crap if it happened, but it's not a fight anyone's thought about. Give me Moose versus Fedor. That'd be fun as hell. Oh. Like, just do that. Do that sort of like really weird, dumb stuff, because like, I don't care about him fighting Anatoly Tokov. Like, no one does. He's done the thing. He will have defended a middleweight title a bunch of times. Huzzah. If you want to have him go get a light heavyweight title shot, that's cool. But I'm equally as comfortable just being like, I don't know, let's just roll out a bunch of people who also have big names and just bang our action figures together, because that's a really fun thing to do.
Oh, my Lord. You just took me for a ride there. I was in. I was all the way in. You're talking about Musasi versus Romero. That's really fun. Musasi versus Rumble. That's really fun. But then you said Fedor, and I got all tingly inside. And all of a sudden, that's all I ever won again.
Isn't that really fun?
I've never thought of that matchup at all, but I cannot. Like, that needs to happen now. That's the fight.
It would be unbelievable. Like, and that's the sad thing is Bellator's not going to do it because they lost all their fun. Like, they don't have fun in Bellator anymore.
They might be listening to this right now and might book it just to spite you.
I hope, like, if they did a bunch of things to spite me, they would be a much better promotion than they currently are, for being honest. So, like, I hope so, because that would be, you're not good. And they, like, Bellator has forgotten that they're not good. They think that they're, like, very good because they arguably have the best light heavyweight in the world or whatever. Like, mostly you guys are just not as high quality as UFC, so you should also just be more than willing to have fun. And Moose Fedor is fun as hell. Like, that's just an incredibly fun fight.
Moose would be 100% down to. Like, that dude would, absolutely. He fought Mark Hunt. Like, he would sign up tomorrow to fight Fedor.
He doesn't care at all. And I can't imagine favored, Fedor would say no. Oh, he'd definitely be favored.
Yeah, he would probably be favored, yeah. It'd be cool. Oh, yeah. So maybe, like, what, like 125, something like that? 115?
Maybe just because of the weight difference.
Yeah.
But, you know, mm-hmm. like, he would definitely be favored. But it would also, I also don't think that's like an unrealistic fight, given how, like, yeah. who they are. They're both legends of the sport. Like, do fun stuff like that, because for as good as I think Johnny Eblen can be or whatever, this has zero Q rating. Nobody gives two tugs on this one. Like, this is just, this is spinning the wheels here. And that's what it is.
All right. Well,
he's 11-0. Johnny Eblen's 11-0. He's the number one contender in Bellator.
As I mentioned, I have him ranked. And that doesn't change that nobody cares about this fight. Right. So if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But I'm pretty confident our traffic numbers are going to be like, Jed is extremely right. They should do Moose Fedor. People would watch the hell out of that.
Either way, I'm excited for this fight. I think it's an interesting fight. I'm interested to see where Johnny Eblen really stands in the global scheme, because I agree with you, Jed. He's a very interesting prospect. I like that they made this fight, but I hope they start doing some really fun stuff with Gegard after this. I want to move on, gentlemen, because I know you just crapped on them a lot, Jed, but something Bellator has been doing very well, I've thought, was this Bantamweight Grand Prix that they put together. And we have two matchups coming up here on Friday. We have Enrique Barzola versus Magomedov. The winner of that's going to fight Patchy Mix. And then the one everyone has their eye on, Leandro Higo versus Danny Sabatello, the latter of whom has been making, I don't know, quite a bit of noise. Let's say that. He has been very loud.
D-Sabs is the man.
Danny Sabatello, I would say five times the amount of people know him now than he did before his last fight. The winner of him versus Higo is going to fight Rafael Stotts for the interim title. So, Jed, true or false, the eventual winner of this Grand Prix is fighting tomorrow night.
False.
Okay. Who do you think, Stotts?
Stotts is currently the guy I would have. I also think Danny Sabatello's game, well, Danny Sabatello is easily the best person on the mic, don't get me wrong. And I want him to win. Man, do I want him to win, because he is a quote machine, and I absolutely love that. But the stuff he said coming into this one is also just incredible. The, hey, for the last, you know, every week when we're training, you get your partners to emulate fighters. And I'm like, I've just been asking all my training partners, hey, fight me really shitty because Leandro Ego's a really shitty fighter. It's just like an incredible line. It's unbelievable stuff. And it builds on his post-fight speech in his last win, which was one of like the five best post-fight speeches literally in the history of the sport. So I love Danny Sabatello, and Bellator would be in a great spot if he managed to win. But I just think Haufian Stotts is his style. He's a much better wrestler. He's going to be able to stuff the shots. He's a much better striker. He is my odds-on favorite to win the GP, but a Stott-Sabatello finale, very much in play, and would be an absolute banger.
Well, so that would be a semifinal, because then Patchy Mix is on the other side. Work? Yeah, but okay. Stotts can talk really well as well, and the lead-up of that would be, just in terms of the mic work, would be fantastic. AK, same question to you that I just asked Jed. I mean, we have four guys going on Friday night. Is the winner of this the eventual winner of this tournament fighting tomorrow night?
I like Magomedov, probably another guy that falls under the nobody cares about this guy Jed category. Is the winner?
He's a good fighter.
He's a very good fighter. He's fought Stotts already. I think he lost to him. Gosh, that's a good question. Is the winner?
Because maybe I'm buying the hype, but I actually think there's a very, very real possibility Danny Sabatello is going to come out of nowhere and just win this whole thing.
Yeah, and look, he has the style.
That is the best case scenario. Listen, if he does that, Bellator would be happy.
It would be like a Ben Askren type thing, right? Where like Ben Askren in cage maybe was not the most exciting guy, but there was something about his personality and something about his way he could, you know, sort of sell
people
fights.
People gravitated to him.
People did gravitate towards him. This is true. Now, he was a little also more, but I mean, Askren also had kind of the pedigree, right? The pedigree, the national championships, competing at the Olympics. So he had a little bit more of a mainstream pedigree than Danny Sabatello does. Kind of like you guys just said, Sabatello more so came out of nowhere. Like Askren came into Bellator with a name. Sabatello is like kind of homegrown in Bellator now. And it's to his credit, and it's also how I think Bellator has also done a decent job of marketing him. Like, putting him in the main event is very smart. Leandro Higo, very reliable. Leandro Higo is kind of a weird... He's kind of a weird guy, right? He just always seems to find himself in relevant fights, but doesn't win them ever. Is that unfair to say about Leandro Higo?
No, because he's a really shitty fighter. Danny Sabatello told us so.
No, you're not wrong, though, because I think the three people that would be most like outstanding of the fights he's been in are Dantes, Caldwell, and Pico, and he lost all of them.
He beat Caldwell the second time.
So he beat him.
He did lose the first time, and
he also missed weight twice in a row. So you know, this hit.
Yes, he's a weird case. He's just always getting. He's always on the main cards. He's always getting like co-main or main opportunities, and yet never seems to win the big one when it matters. And I don't think that's going to change on Friday. Yeah, I think Sabatello's style is perfect. I always favor, like, when you're talking about guys who can become champions, guys who can win tournaments like this, I always favor fighters who have an A+ skill, right? And not everyone in MMA does. He is an A+ wrestler, A+ grinder. That can take you. We all know that can take you so far in MMA. I mean, it's just a fact. It's just proven. It's been proven in Bellator, as we just said with Ben Askren. So I don't know if I'd put him on that level as a Ben Askren, but boy, he has looked really, really good in his Bellator fight so far. And this is, now he's going to get. Have fun, buckle up, fans. He's going to get 5 rounds to grind Higo into dust. He's been saying he's going to hurt him and get a finish. It's not impossible. He's one of those guys. He was certainly a finisher on the regional scene, but ever since he sort of stepped up to the next level of competition, he has not finished anyone. I don't think he cares. Again, like I said, he's not the kind of guy who's going to, you know, he'll say it pre-fight. He's not going to apologize for it after that. Oh, I'm sorry I didn't get the finish. No, if he gets the win, he's going to be happy, and he's going to talk his talk, which, as you guys mentioned, is very good. And as far as I know, he hasn't like crossed any weird lines yet, right? With his trash talk.
Yet is the operative term.
Yet is the operative. I mean, yes.
He is a high likelihood of getting milkshake ducked in the next year. Is my
sure
my not so subtle take on
Dennis. You can say that about 90% of the people in MMA, though. So that is true. You know, but yes, for someone who talks this much and does as many interviews, yeah, it does feel like he's just bound to say something that rubs someone the wrong way. But that's what I do like about him, is that he is like, he has good lines so far. It's mostly just focused on trashing his opponent. That's also, there's an art
also
to that.
It is kind of like the, it's not like a, Like it's mean, but it's not like mean spirited in that like he's going really personal with stuff or like bringing family into it. Like like it's very Chael Sonnen-esque. Chael liked to tell people they sucked. Like I like that kind of childish trash talk of like you suck. That is very relatable.
Yeah, Danny Sabatello is the spiritual successor to Chael Sonnen. I know Colby Covington desperately tried to do that, but Colby Covington was never in on the joke enough to do it, and I think Danny Sabatello is, and so like it hits differently and it's way funnier.
Also, Colby isn't. And I don't think Colby's as quick on his feet. Like a lot of that stuff's rehearsed. Danny feels like it's much quicker.
Colby has zero wit to
him. And not to go off on a tangent, the shame is Colby is a much better fighter than Chael Sonnen or Danny Sabatello, and I wish he had been able to reconcile that with some other.
I'm not willing to say that he's a better fighter than Chael Sonnen.
I agree.
I like Chael Sonnen.
People underrate how good Chael Sonnen was for a bit.
And like Colby's getting a lot of mileage off of wins that happened 4 years ago.
Hard agree. Close fight. Beating Jorge Masvidal, who's so good.
People give him credit for going nine rounds with the champ. They give him credit for that. He's a really good matchup for Kamaru Usman.
But I agree with Jed. We are totally on a different tangent, but I would like to see Colby fight someone relevant in this division. Sometimes soon. That would be nice.
Just not going to happen.
By the way, Jed, when we are on like episode 400 of Damn They Were Good and we're doing Chael Sonnen, the Chael Sonnen episode, I want in on that. That'll be fun.
Oh, we're doing Chael way sooner than that because Chael is not a fun watch for the most part, but I've never had as much fun watching Chael throw away a middleweight title than in that fight with Anderson Silva. It's honestly one of the five most memorable experiences watching a fight I've ever had. So
I wish you could get him on the show. That would be amazing.
I bet we can, actually.
It may not be impossible. Yeah. Quick pick here for these tournament picks. I'm taking Magomedov and I'm taking Sabatello. Who you guys got?
I'm taking Sabatello for sure. I think I'm taking Magomedov. I was hoping AK was going to come out with the wild card and be like, I think Enrique Barzola is going to win the whole damn thing.
He's looked good in Bellator.
I love Enrique Barzola.
He's a way better fighter than he gets credit for.
Yes.
And I honestly kind of am interested in an upset pick against Magomedov here. Like, I think Magomedov just hasn't impressed, even though he's a good fighter. Whereas Barzola, I think, has a higher ceiling at points in time. It's still a tough style matchup, but I for funsies, I'll go with the chaos theory and take Barzola to pull off the upset.
I could definitely see this becoming a damage versus control situation. I could see a lot of upset. You know, Magomedov wins a split decision, and a lot of people upset. Like, no, but Barzola was killing him in round one and two, first half of round one and two. For you know, he started grinding. Yeah, I could see that happening, but I'll go with the least fun option and go with Magomedov. And then Sabatello, of course, to advance.
One of the quick tidbit from this card I want to mention, then we can move on.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Kat Zingano is like quietly on the prelims of this one.
Uh-huh.
She's fighting Pam Sorensen. And
because Bellator sucks. Well,
hold on. I'm not putting this on Bellator because at this point I have to admit that I'm like somewhat confused by what Kat Zingano's doing in Bellator and like the run that she's sort of on. Like she came over here talking noise about wanting to fight Chris Cyborg. It's something she had been talking about for years, even back in the UFC as well. She'd always made it clear that's the fight she wanted. And yet we're on fight three now of this Bellator thing. She's fought two women without Wikipedia pages, and now she's fighting Sorensen, who even, you know, she's former Invicta champion, but she's not a big name by any stretch. And again, she's on like the YouTube prelims. And on Wednesday at the media day, Kat was asked point blank about fighting Chris Cyborg, and she essentially just waffles and says the only way she's going to do it is if Chris agrees to independent drug testing, which is definitely something not Bellator's not going to do or care about. It's been 11 years since Cyborg failed the drug test for a steroid. What is going on here? Because, Jed, this is starting to feel like a GDR situation all over again with Cyborg.
Oh, that's because it is. I have a general rule where my assumption is that professional fighters are not afraid to fight other professional fighters because they are professional fighters. Getting your ass beat is actually not like that bad of a thing for anyone who's ever had their ass beat. Like, it's okay. You recover and move on. But
I mean, what the hell? Getting your ass beat sucks. I'm gonna cut you off there. Getting your ass beat.
It's fine.
All right, continue.
It's fine. Like, it's not, you don't want to do it, but it's whatever. And if you're getting paid to do it, then that's fine. But there's honestly only one realistic way to approach what's happening here, and it's that Kat Singano doesn't want to fight Chris Cyborg. She talked a lot of greasiness, and then actually found herself in a position where this is going to happen. And now she has done the unique thing of, there are not a lot of times that I can recall Chris Cyborg absolutely dunking on people.
Oof, yeah.
But after, like, I mean, she's dunked on people in the cage a lot, don't get me wrong, but like, after Zingano said her, I want an independent thing, Cyborg went on Twitter and was like, yeah, so Zingano's 9-0 and beat Miesha Tate and Amanda Nunes before USADA came to the UFC, and she's been 1-4 since, and then went 2-0 after she left it. So really, who needs the testing? And like, I'm not here
also
to say
she threw in a, like, have fun fighting on YouTube type of thing as well. It was a real 10-7. It was
oh,
money.
She dunked all over her, and I am not in any way saying Kat Zingano's on the gas, because one, I don't care, and two, it probably isn't, but like, it also just doesn't matter. But if you're just gonna come, if you're gonna come talking reckless, you need to be ready to not get absolutely throttled. And she did. So like, losing the war of words to Cyborg, and certainly losing the fight if and when that happens, it's a bad look. Everything she's done is bad. It's still very stupid that Bellator put her on the prelims. Like, this is ostensibly a woman you're going to have fight, ostensibly your champion, though I guess Cyborg's contract situation is in a bit of limbo or whatever. So I don't know what the hell anyone's doing here. It's all bad. And it's just par for the course with Bellator these days.
What do you make of this?
Well, for one, I would have loved to have seen Kat Zingano and Pam Svoronsson as the main card opener. I get it, Brendan Ward and Cassius Cain, I guess they're assuming will end in sort of like an exciting finish. That's probably why they put it out there. And that's fine. That's always good reasoning to make a fight a main card opener. But they have like a former lightweight champion on there. Brent Primus is on the prelims. Anatoly Tokov, who we said might be the next middleweight title challenger, is on the prelims. Saba Hamasi versus Macon Mendoza has some heat behind it. There's a lot of card fights they could have put as the main card opener. I get it. You want to have the two Grand Prix fights on the main card, so you can't move those. A little bit of an odd choice, though, of Brendan Ward and Cassius Cain with respect to both those guys. Alejandra Lara, she just recently fought for a Bellator title and is always very fun to watch. Anyway, but yeah, with regards to Kat Zingano, my only thing would be, I assume she's getting paid the same no matter who she fights in Bellator at the moment. Again, they don't have pay-per-views. I know they've flirted with the idea of having a pay-per-view someday, and they've had them in the past, but they're not going to hold one anytime soon. And if that's the case, Kat Zingano probably gets paid the same for fighting Pam Svoronsson as she does for fighting Chris Cyborg. I don't know what the championship boost is. There's certainly no pay-per-view points. Maybe there's a bit of a salary boost for being a title fight. So in that sense, she should be angling for it like hardcore.
Or she just get a belt.
She's not.
If she wins,
she's probably not going to beat Chris Cyborg in a fight anyway. Just being real. And again, if her posturing is any indication, maybe she kind of agrees with us, you know, or maybe she's waiting for something to happen. Maybe she's waiting for Chris Cyborg to, she thinks Chris Cyborg will become a free agent or something.
Yeah,
maybe she wants to get a vacant featherweight title, which
that
is
feels right.
That's my read.
But
on
I mean,
it,
sure. Yeah. And I guess that'll be a salary increase there, but like, no one will care. I guess if you're a fighter, it doesn't matter. So she is being very cagey and very strategic, very, cat-like, you might say.
Oh my gosh.
I hate you so much.
She's being shitty like a cat. And if that is the case, and this somehow does if a year from now we're talking about Kat Zingano winning a vacant featherweight title and suddenly getting a couple of fat paychecks before she decides to walk away, you know what? Then she did it the right way. But yeah, I'm not a fan of how it's been handled, and Chris Cyborg really did some damage with that tweet.
She ethered her. I almost just kicked you off this podcast because of that cat joke. Don't do that again. this whole thing's weird to me. It's, again, she talks so much noise for so long. I don't know. The independent drug testing thing, what are we doing anymore? Anyway, let's move on to PFL 5. We got the heavyweights. We got the lightweights. Jed, you're going to be there, as you said at length at the beginning of this. AK, what's catching your eye when it comes to this card? What do you like? What are you looking forward to?
Correction. It is the heavyweights and the featherweights, which is confusing because Anthony Pettis is one of the lead fights, and he is a lightweight. It's a weird one.
That is actually why I thought it was lightweight. So my bad.
Yes, there's one lightweight fight, which is above all the other featherweight fights, which are on there. So, but yes, and heavyweights. So.
But oddly, not the main event, which it very clearly should be.
Yes. Why is the main event? Well, listen, Bruno Capolozza. He is a champion. He is the defending PFL champion.
That's why
the fact that you just said I need to check
stupid.
In the middle of this show. Yeah,
no, I need no. That's not, I need to check if he is a Favre in our rankings, a fighter also receiving votes. I don't know who put him on there. Probably Guillerme Cruz.
I love that you've given that an acronym.
It's a Favre. Yeah, you're a Favre. A fighter Favre? Also receiving votes. Yeah, you're a Favre. So he's a Favre. He has one vote in our rankings. So he's on the board in there somewhere. He's in the top 20, top 25 ish area somewhere. So in that sense, I do apply. Them for saying, listen, we want to respect our defending champ. On the other hand, Anthony Pettis is a bigger name than anybody on this card. He should be in your main event. This is just silly. But yeah,
also, he's fighting Stevie Ray. He's fighting Stevie Ray. That's a good fight.
And Capolozza is fighting Mathias Scheffel, who I've never heard of, and is 15-8. Like that was, you could have made that man's name up.
Listen,
it's just dumb.
Listen, this is a card of chaos. All right, this card has seen five fights changed this week. Six new fighters signed to the PFL just to keep this card together. I think I'm sure you and Connor talked about this on the gambling podcast, Jed. But
Connor's very upset.
Brendan Lochnane is fighting a newcomer. Goltzaw is fighting Maurice Green, who people of course know from the UFC, the Ultimate Fighter UFC. Juan Adams, also from the UFC, is facing. I really have to look up these names, guys, as I'm talking about them. Is facing Kai.
I was going to let you try it. Sam, I don't know how to say that.
Okay, Sam K, I'm going to say. And they're both new to the PFL. Anton DeLeja is fighting Shelton Graves. And Bubba Jenkins is fighting Exon. Hinaldo Exon. So I love the way the PFL sent this out. Like, they sent, the email. They sent out a tweet, five new fights on Friday's card, or six new fighters come to the PFL. I'm like, that's one way to look at it. So there is the opportunity for chaos here, guys. None of these fighters have a realistic chance of making the playoffs. The featherweights do. It's wide open. No one had a finish in the first featherweight card. So there you go. Anyone who's a finish, they're probably locked to get in. The heavyweights, everyone in the top four right now has at least 5 points. If Scheffel gets a first round finish, he's in. Clinton Abreu can sneak in with a decision if Anton DeLeja loses. You know what? Why do I say this? All the PFL fans know this. I'm sorry. I shouldn't even have to break this down. PFL fans have the standings on their, as their desktop wallpaper. They know. I don't need to break down who needs to win and who needs to lose on Friday. What am I doing?
I mean, all the heavyweights can basically punch their ticket in. I mean, I guess
Clinton
Abreu is technically outside of the top four at the moment. But if he beats Hinn and Fea, he'll move into the top four.
Yes.
Yeah. It's honestly not a bad PFL card as far as PFL cards go. It's very weird what happened, that a bunch of things changed. And I understand the inclination to have Capolozza Scheffel in the main event, but it's just objectively incorrect. Because Pettis Stevie Ray is honestly, it's one of the better fights going on this weekend, including the UFC card even.
It's one really of the better fights PFL fight. Could just put together, period.
Yeah, just in general. So it's very weird, especially weird that it's a random lightweight fight on an otherwise heavyweight featherweight card. Everything about it's very strange. Because didn't they do lightweights last weekend?
They did do the lightweights most of the lightweights, last event.
Except for Pettis.
Except for this one, which would make sense to me if they were doing this to be the main event of this card, because you want to put something in the in the marquee spot. But to just not have that on the other lightweight card to put it as the co-main here seems very, very weird to me.
I agree with you in that it's obvious that Pettis Ray should be the main event. It's very strange to me that it's not. But either way, there's actual like stakes to that fight too, because Anthony Pettis is already in the playoffs, and yes, so he's in the running for $1 million. Yep. But Stevie Ray could also jump in there if he manages to get a first or a second round finish. So
yes,
it's up in the air.
Why is Pettis in the playoffs?
Pettis
because he got a first round finish.
Yes.
And so he's currently in the lead with 6 points in the finish ranking.
I forgot that the way that their first round means he's over OAM, who has two wins.
Yeah,
two decisions, yes.
But ultimately, though, you look at this card, it's a card of a bunch of heavyweight banger fights, right? Like, it's not, like, marquee names, but it is probably going to be a lot of violence. It seems like it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm kind of here for it.
It's better than Parisian Badeau on the UFC card on Saturday.
Yeah.
Is that on the main card?
Yeah. That's
the wrong.
Third fight from the top.
That's wrong.
No, we just talked about it on BTL. We'll very briefly speak on this just because that fight infuriates me, because Badeau's French and Parisian's name is Parisian, and the UFC is going to Paris in 2 months. And it's incredibly stupid that this fight is happening in the Apex instead of UFC Paris. It makes me so mad. I'm so mad about it. I cannot express to you
how
mad that makes
me. These are men's lives. They can't wait 2 months. They got bills to pay. They come on.
Joe those guys
Silva
aren't selling.
Is rolling over in his grave.
Those guys aren't selling a single more ticket in France, if we're being honest.
No, but Joe Silva would have never allowed this to happen. That fight would have 1,000% happened in the undercard of UFC Paris.
How about this? It's going to end in a weird no contest. They rebook it for UFC Paris.
That's what Mike said, and I don't care how it ends. Just rebook it for UFC Paris. Whoever wins,
no matter what
happens.
Well, quickly, I do want to hit this main event, because, Jed, if you look at Bruno Capoloza's record since joining PFL, 5-0, four knockouts, one very oversized $1 million check, and a championship belt. And so he's back at it again. And
you know who his last loss is too, my man?
I don't offhand.
Off the top of your head?
I don't offhand.
Oh, UFC light heavyweight champion Jiří Procházka is the last man to defeat Bruno Capoloza.
That's not bad. That's not bad. So
that's not a bad loss at all.
So that goes back to what I was going to say, which is that seemingly anyone can get ranked at heavyweight with a few good wins. And yet, as AK mentioned, I just actually checked our rankings for MMA fighting, and only one person on the entire website, our good friend Steven Morocco, has him ranked at all. And he has him ranked barely in the top 15. He's like right on the outskirts.
Oh, Steven. Oh,
Have we been disrespecting Bruno Capoloza in our rankings?
No, because his win, well, one, two of his five wins are over Ante Delaja, who, sure, like, that's, it's not an awful win, but like, that's,
oh my god, that, you just broke AK, his mic's muted and he's losing it right now.
Ante Delaja is not a Favre. Mo DeReese, who I don't know who that is. Stuart Austin, like, these aren't high profile wins. However, volume matters, and if he goes out here and gets another win over another warm body in Matthias Scheffel, whose nickname is Buffa, I don't know what that means, but the man is a well-built young man. If he goes out and beats Scheffel, I'm probably going to move him into my rankings. Honestly, looking at my rankings right now, I have Ryan Bader in there sort of because everyone else has Ryan Bader in there, and I feel compelled to do it, but I've been looking for a reason to remove him. So
how dare you disrespect the Bellator Bader. Heavyweight champion?
I dare. And either way, if Capoloza wins, certainly if he gets a big knockout here, he's going to make my rankings this year, or this next iteration, just because six in a row is a lot of wins and you deserve to be rewarded, even if maybe your quality of opposition isn't the highest in the world.
You mentioning that Capoloza beat Delija twice to win $1 million last year, I was about to say, that's the most absurd thing I've ever seen. Then I remembered Lance Palmer beating Alex Gilpin three times in one season and winning $1 million.
Yep.
He beat the same guy three times in a year and won $1 million.
It's not a bad gig.
Look,
it's not a bad gig.
It's a great gig if you can
it's
get
a great
it.
Gig.
It's if a great you gig. Can get it, it's a great great gig.
I love PFL. You're so lucky. You're so lucky you're going to be there.
I'm really excited, honestly.
Well, let's get out of here. One last thing before we go. I just wanted to throw it out there to you guys. I mean, anything from BKFC that you want to mention before we get out of here? Because it actually is not a bad card. I mean, you have Luis Palomino fight for the welterweight title, Uli Diaz fight for the middleweight title, Jimmy Rivera's debut, Beck Rollins, Britton Hart 2, as AK said at the top of this. Anything standing out to you guys?
Beck Rollins, Britton Hart 2 is probably going to be fun. The only other thing, honestly, I'm not... BKFC has never tickled me in the way that a lot of people seem to be really invested in it. But Luis Palomino is just a really violent, fun man to watch. And I'll watch any Luis Palomino fight like that he ever has just out of respect for the Gaethje fights. Like, he could fight, he'd go on a 12-fight losing streak and look awful. And just out of respect for the wars with Justin Gaethje, I'll still tune in for that man. But he's still pretty fun to watch anyway. So, you know, that's a bonus.
I'm excited about the debut of Jimmy Rivera. I'm a fan. I've always kind of been a fan of El Terror. I had him ranked, I believe, the last time he fought in the UFC, which has been well over a year ago now. Yeah, he was still a ranked bantamweight. Certainly not anymore, the way that division has moved along. So, yeah, I think he's a great fighter. It's a really kind of a tough matchup. This guy, Howard Davis, has fought for BKFC already. So he's got bare-knuckle experience. He's big. He's 6'2". I think anyone who's seen Jimmy Rivera fight is—he's not a tall man, you know.
Wait, the guy Jimmy Rivera's fighting someone who's 6'2"?
Yeah,
he's listed at 6'2". Maybe the it's off. I don't know, but that is the measurements I'm seeing.
He's still going to be much taller than 5'5".
Jimmy Rivera is 5'4".
Jimmy Rivera is not a tall man. He's not a tall man. Even among bantamweights, he's a short guy.
Oh my god!
So sad. I'm just sad about the Jimmy Rivera fight because. He didn't, like, he's certainly not the best he's ever been, right? But, like, the losses that exited him from the UFC and MMA, Marlon Moraes, like, got washed overnight. Yep. A decision loss to Aljo, a decision loss to Piotr Jan, 1A and 1B at bantamweight, and a decision loss to Pedro Munhoz. And he beat Cody Stamann, like, a year and a half ago. Cody Stamann, who just obliterated Eddie Wineland. Like, the dude can still compete. Maybe not at the upper echelon, but now he's in the retirement home fight league, and that makes me sad.
Maybe he's making
good
money.
He's only 32, too.
He's fought a lot, though. He's definitely up there in fight years. In fight years, he is up there.
He had an extensive career before he finally made it to the UFC. I distinctly remember him being a regional powerhouse.
Listen, he's speedy. He's got better power in his hands. I think people give him credit for. Maybe he outworks this guy. That or we see a 6'2" guy pick him apart for 5 rounds, which is gonna be kind of horrible to watch. But we'll see how it goes. But yeah, win or lose, I am intrigued by that co-main event.
You pointed out that he is fighting someone who's 6'2" actually makes me more interested in watching this, just because that's a freak show and I don't actually understand what they're doing. If that's what we're doing, but hey, I'm here for it. It is a loaded weekend, fellas. We didn't even talk anything about the UFC card. That was actually the point. But it was fun to spotlight a lot of these other promotions that are going this week. It's a big week right now. And then obviously next week is International Fight Week. So we got a loaded just stretch coming up. So anyway, I hope all you guys out there have a great rest of your weekend. Thank you so much for joining us for our little mini pod preview here. That man is Alexander K. Lee. That is Jed Meshew. I am Sean Oshadi. Please keep it locked to MMA Fighting. We're going to have all our usual UFC preview, post-fight, all everything you come to expect from this wonderful website. In the meantime, have a great rest of your week, and we'll catch you later.
Hey, this is Scott Galloway, author, professor, entrepreneur, and most importantly, host of the Prop G podcast. We got a special series running on right now called The Future of Work, where I answer all your questions on, surprise, the future of work. Questions including, what are we missing when we work remotely? Or how do we handle work-life balance when a major opportunity comes knocking? From the provocative to the technical, we're offering insights you won't want to miss. So tune in to The Future of Work, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Canva. You can find it on the Prop G Pod wherever you get your podcasts.